the boys got to the tattoo parlor and they pulled in. And when they pulled in, one of the tattoo artists pulled in right behind them and said, "Are you here for Taylor?" And the stepbrother said, "Yes, I am." And the guy unlocked the door and he ran in there looking for Taylor. And he found my baby in the back room, dead on a couch.
How was she positioned? Was she sitting up or was she lying down?
They said she was laying down on her side, facing the back of the couch, and her knee was up. And they said it looked like she was laying there cold. He then called his mother, and his mother called me and told me it wasn't good. I asked her, "What do you mean it's not good?" And she said, "It's not good, Tiffany." And I screamed and I said, "What do you mean it's not good?" And she said, "She didn't make it." And I thank the Lord right now that there was a traffic jam that I had just started coming up to, and everybody was stopped. And I was just rolling up to a stop when I got that phone call, because I had my breakdown sitting in traffic alone for a good 10 or 15 minutes. And if I had been driving, I probably would be dead myself. When my daughter's best friend called me, she was somebody called her and told her. They, like I said, they were en route also to that tattoo shop. She called me crying. We cried together. He went to the tattoo shop. And after the brother got there, the next person that showed up was Taylor's boyfriend. He walked in and was the second person to see her laying there. Then the best friend showed up. The cops showed up. I was en route there. The stepmom was en route there. We all went there. This was 2 o'clock in the afternoon when she was found. When I got there, there was sheriff's departments there. There was no crime scene tape. There was no forensics coming through doing their thing. They were just waiting on the coroner. So the story was that the kid that supposedly at the time they were saying did her tattoo said that at 11 o'clock she had passed out on the back couch and he couldn't wake her up, so he decided to let her sleep it off, and he was just going to come back in the morning and wake her up. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It wasn't in the morning. The owner of the place shows up and tells the cops that he was there until 11:30 and then proceeded to tell the police that all these people outside of his business was making it look bad. Another gentleman showed up on a motorcycle revving his engine. There was nothing going on. But when he got off his motorcycle, my ex-husband looked at him and said, "And who are you?" He says, "Oh, I'm so-and-so. I work here too." And he goes, "Oh yeah, what time did you leave last night?" He said at midnight. And then the owner said that he left at 11:30. So that's 3 different times that they all said they left. The kid that closed up, that locked her in there and left her there, said he closed up at 11.
So you're telling me that there were at least 3 guys there with 3 different times when they left and 3 different versions of what had happened?
It was actually more than that.
And then you and Taylor's boyfriend start getting really strange messages that neither of you believe came from Taylor.
We originally thought somebody else was texting her or somebody else was on her phone. Some things have been wiped off her phone. We just realized this in the last 2 hours. The correspondence between her and the owner of the shop that was supposed to be going to be buying her salve, the guy that is the one who actually did her tattoo, but told them the other guy did her tattoo. And the other guy said, "No, he did her tattoo, but I know who did her tattoo." And it was the owner. All the correspondence between him and her on her phone, there was nothing. We could find nothing where she was saying she was going there or him texting her and saying, "Bring your stuff by." We couldn't find anything on any of her platforms or anything. Her best friend sat down and went through her entire phone. Well, Taylor had another phone that she had lost one night, and so she went and bought another one. So she still had the other one. And so she carried the 2 phones with her, but the other one only worked like when she was hooked up to Wi-Fi. And she just kept random things on it. She kept everything was still, all her platforms were still on there. And that was really puzzling to us to find that none of that was on there. My youngest was looking at her other phone and found where on Snapchat was all this correspondence between her and the guy that did her tattoo that owned the shop. But on her phone that she used that worked, there was none of that correspondence on her Snapchat. It was all on Snapchat, or not Snapchat, Instagram. And also there was a gentleman that commented on the Grizz Hood News. She's the one that actually broke the story and it started this. It's all over Facebook. If you type in, you saw it?
Yes.
She's the one that kicked it all off. And there was a guy that commented on it and he had said, "Unfortunately, I was there when it happened."
Hello, this is Mark. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I get into this week's episode, I would like to ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you can help support the podcast, I'm asking that you subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. If you subscribe, I will share exclusive content with you. To support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com. and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, that's also fine, but you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families. Many of these cases can be solved if the right person hears it and can provide the necessary tip to solve the case. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story is a little unusual. Most of the cases that I've covered in the podcast are either cold or they happened several years ago. This week's case occurred last week in Houston, Texas. The potential victim was a young mother of two who was found deceased inside a locked tattoo shop. For this episode, I interviewed Tiffany Hicks, a grieving mother who just lost her 27-year-old daughter, Taylor Marie Clark, under mysterious circumstances. Taylor was an entrepreneur who had developed her own salve for people with tattoos. She planned on marketing her product through various tattoo shops. The product was called TaylorMade. On September 17, 2021, Taylor arrived at a Houston tattoo shop called 59 Ink. She planned on speaking to the owner about carrying her tattoo salve. She also wanted to get another tattoo and another one touched up. While at the tattoo shop, Taylor kept in touch throughout the evening with her boyfriend and mother. But things eventually got really strange. Taylor's boyfriend received a message that referred to him as Daddy. While Tiffany received a text from Taylor stating that she was dead, Tiffany assumed that it meant that her daughter's phone had died. After all communication between Taylor, her boyfriend, and Tiffany ceased, Tiffany and Taylor's boyfriend both believed that someone else was sending messages on Taylor's phone, pretending to be her. Taylor's family and friends began frantically searching for her. They drove around and checked various bars and locations that Taylor frequented, but they didn't find her. By 2 p.m. on the following day, which was Saturday, September 18th, 2021, Taylor's stepbrother and one of his friends drove to the tattoo shop. One of the tattoo artists pulled up. The stepbrother and his friend said they were looking for Taylor. The three men entered the tattoo shop and found Taylor's lifeless body in the back room, lying on a couch. Authorities questioned the shop's owner and tattoo artists that were there the previous day. The men claimed that Taylor was intoxicated and had passed out. They decided to leave her there overnight to sleep it off. Allegedly, Taylor passed out around 11 p.m. However, a customer who was in the shop that night reached out to Tiffany. He told her that Taylor spoke to him the entire time he was in the shop, getting a tattoo, and that Taylor did not seem intoxicated to him. He also claimed that Taylor seemed fine when he left the shop at midnight. So if you are to believe this customer, then someone is lying about the timeline. Tiffany began looking into the background of the tattoo shop's owner and the employee who locked Taylor inside the shop. Both men have criminal records. Also, another woman had died in 2020 under similar circumstances. Just a year ago, another young woman named Priscilla Rodriguez was found deceased in the tattoo owner's home. Taylor's best friend has since reached out to Priscilla's sister, who said that she does not believe that Priscilla died of an overdose because she did not use drugs. This case has many strange twists to it. Now on with the strange death of Taylor Marie Clark, as told by her mother, Tiffany Hicks.
Taylor was such a beautiful baby. She had the prettiest blue eyes. And as she, you know, grew into a toddler, she had her own way about her. She was unique, Taylor Marie was. When she was little, she was just her, so she didn't really understand too much about sharing. She didn't want to share nothing. But as she got older, her uniqueness started shining. She was unfiltered. She did not filter anything. She said exactly what was on her mind. She'd been this way since a child. She just said what it was right then and there. And as she got older, it worried me because I thought the way she's so blunt with the things she says, I don't want it to get her in trouble and somebody hurt her or something, because she just said what was on her mind. And I have since found out that my daughter was loved by so many people. I could never have imagined how many people loved my daughter and how she had touched their lives. She was a single mother. She had two beautiful children. Presley just turned 6. And my little Phoenix, he turns 4 this weekend. She was a phenomenal mother. I remember telling me when she had the kids, she said, Mom, I don't want to just be a half-ass mom. I want to be that mom, the mom that does it all. And she did everything with her kids. And she loved them fiercely. And that's one thing that broke my heart, is because I know they're not going to remember her because they're both so young. They'll know her face, but they won't remember her and the way she loved them and what a wonderful person she was. Taylor was a unique person. She was a health fanatic. I mean, the things she ate, I would just say, Taylor, what is, I can't do that. I want real food. I want a hamburger. She always cooked pretty healthy, and she was always drinking teas that were good for you, or waters with different things, you know, stuff. I'm a junk food junkie. Yeah, I love those things. But Taylor, no, that's how she was. She was into those things. She had gotten a little bit into mood crystals, or I don't know what you call it. I didn't ever really pay much attention to it, but she was into that. But from an early age, she wanted tattoos. And she got her first tattoo when she was 15. It was a bird that said Tiffany on it. That's my name. I'm her mother. And I told her that she could not have any more tattoos. But as soon as she got out of the house, I want to go back to this part. My dad got really sick when Taylor was in high school, and she missed a lot of school because there was a lot of late night with dad being sick and us having to, you know, figure out what was going on. And so Taylor missed a lot of school, and they called me down to the school and told me that she was so far behind, she would never graduate with her class. Well, my baby showed them. She graduated a year ahead of her class. I was proud of her for that.
That's truly amazing. What part of Texas are you and Taylor from?
In Humble. I grew up in Houston and the Humble area. Taylor was raised in Humble.
Is that a small town?
It's not real small. When we first moved to Humble, when I was a kid, it was small and there wasn't a lot there, but it's pretty big now. I mean, there's stuff popping up all over the place. It amazes me how big it is now. It's like a big city now, but it used to be very small.
Did Taylor enjoy living in Texas, or did she have aspirations to possibly move to a different state and start a new life?
She wanted to go everywhere. She went to Colorado. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. And she told me that she was going to eventually live in Colorado. And I remember I would get so mad at her. And I'm like, well, look, wherever you go, you and the babies are not going to get that far away from me. So you might as well understand wherever you go, I'm going, because I can't be without y'all. She has a baby sister, and then she has a sister with her dad, and his wife has a sister, and she also has a brother, Apollo, and that's her half-sister. Both of them are her half-sisters. She loved both of them. She had just started trying to bond with Apollo. They had not really been on outs with one another, but Apollo went to live with dad, and so they didn't spend much time together. She had just recently started spending time with her. And I was really happy about that, because I always wanted my kids to always be close.
How has Taylor's death affected your family? I realize it's only been a week since she passed, but I saw a story that had mentioned one of Taylor's sisters demanding justice for the family. So to me, it sounds like your family is definitely united in search of finding out just what happened to her.
We've all decided that we're not going to rest, and I am going to get justice for my daughter, her siblings, and for her children, because Taylor didn't deserve this, and those babies didn't deserve this. We all deserve to have her in our life. She was an absolutely beautiful human being with an absolutely wonderful personality. She just had such an infectious smile, the most beautiful blue eyes. I mean, people were always telling me, your daughter is so beautiful. I mean, she's in her personality, inside and out. She was just a beautiful human being. She went through her hard times when she was a little younger, getting in trouble and stuff. But she straightened up and had the kids, and she was really making a go of it. I was so proud of her. She got her own place, her own car. She did it all by herself. She was pregnant with my grandson, and she went to school to be a medical assistant. While being pregnant with him, she finished school and had him within days after graduating. And then she raised both the kids by herself. Neither one of their dads were present. She was just a great mom. I mean, she was doing well in life. And she just started the aftercare product for tattoo salve. The name of it is Taylor Made Tattoo Salve. And it's got a picture of Medusa on the top of the can with like a dark green hair that Medusa does. I mean, she really went all out. She did a lot of research and then started ordering different things to put in the salve until she perfected it. The first one wasn't all that great, but then she really came out with a good one. And she had several tattoo parlors interested in her product and were waiting for her to go ahead and bring it to them.
What did the salve do? Did it enhance the colors of the tattoo, or did it do something else? Since I don't really know much about tattoos, I thought I would ask.
I don't know much about tattoos, as I don't have any on my body, but it was for the aftercare to keep it from drying out and I guess being so itchy and so forth. And the reason she did it is because she's had so many tattoos that it was something she always felt like that there wasn't something good enough out there for that.
That's really impressive. How old was Taylor when she passed?
Taylor turned 27 on May 31st. I never in a million years thought my daughter would be found the way she was found. How it happened, and I can't even describe the feeling of never hearing her say, I love you, Mom, again.
I can't imagine how you must feel losing your daughter at such an early age. I mean, she just celebrated her birthday not too long ago. Can you tell me when all this happened and the circumstances that led up until Taylor's death? I did look on the internet for information about this case, and I really didn't find a whole lot. Now, didn't this all start on either September the 16th or the 17th, which was about a week ago?
Started on that Friday. I talked to her. We duoed every day. She would duo me when she was taking the kids to school and let the kids tell me good morning and all that. And then we would hang up and she would duo me again and we'd talk back and forth. And we did this all day long. And she was real excited because the guy that had done several of her tattoos was interested in her salve, and she was going to be meeting up with him and showing him her product. He had been waiting for her product, and she had just finally got it ready to go. So her boyfriend wanted to go with her, and she told him no because this was her thing, and she didn't need him there. This was, you know, her deal. You know, she didn't need him to go with her. He really wanted to go with her, because the part of town that she was going to be in was not that great of a part of town. So he texted me about 8-something and said, well, my father passed away in May, and I was going to get my first tattoo in memory of my dad. And so she was wanting to tell them what I was wanting. So she texted me and said, Mom, tell me about the tattoo you want. And I texted back and said, you know what I want. I told you already. She goes, say again, Mom, because I'm here with the tattoo guy and I want to explain it to him so he could, you know, draw it out for us and let you see it and see if that's what your vision is. I text all of it to her and she didn't text me right back. So I text her and I said, you understand, rubber band? And she didn't respond again, which was not alarming because Taylor would get involved in doing things and I knew she was there doing that. So, you know, she would get back in touch with me eventually. about 2 hours later, when I got this message, it wasn't chilling. I thought when I got the message that I received from her that she was just telling me that she was no longer there and that her phone had died. And the message I received from my daughter right at 11 o'clock said, "Jesus, I died."
So you got a text from your daughter saying that she had died. That is very disturbing.
Yes. I was thinking to myself, when I looked on it the next morning, I was thinking she was telling me that her phone died and she didn't even get to tell him about my tattoo. That's why she said, "Jesus, no man." So I called her that morning about 8:39, and because I was going to tell her, "Don't send me messages like that. Killing. Well, she didn't answer the phone. So I went on about my way, figuring she'd call me in a little bit. I knew she'd probably gone out afterwards and I'd hear from her in a bit. Well, after a little while, her boyfriend texted me and said, "Have you talked to Taylor?" And I said, "No." And I got a strange message from her last night. And he said, "I got strange messages from her last night too." He starts telling me the he sends them to me and I'm reading them. And some of the things that are being said in the text, didn't sound like my daughter, how she would talk. And that, and there was they were conversating the whole time she was there. She's sending pictures of the tattoo that she got. She was showing pictures of the tattoo that she got fixed. And she was telling him, like, all of a sudden now I'm a wimp because it's going to take 10 sessions to finish this because it hurts. And she always had a really high threshold for pain. It never had any, it was never painful. And she was like, "I can't believe this. It's going to take me a while to get this finished." But then as the messages went on and got closer to 11 o'clock is when they started sounding strange, like talking like Taylor did not talk. And one particular thing that was said in it, she called him daddy. My daughter would never, ever call a man daddy. If you knew my daughter, she would never have done that. And at a certain point, her boyfriend thought that maybe she had started drinking. And so he was cutting up back and forth with her. And then at the very last message, he says, "I don't believe I'm talking to Taylor. I think somebody else has her phone." Now, at this point, the boyfriend is upset. He's thinking not the worst, but he's thinking, was she up there talking to some guys and the guys got on her phone when they were just cutting up? And so he was upset with her at this point. And also, he's been texting her saying, "When do you want me to get you?" Because she said she was going to Uber and she was going to have him pick her up. After reading all of that, I said, "Hold on a minute. Let me call Mumsy." And that is my granddaughter's grandmother. She had the kids the night before. She always gets both of them on Friday night. And so I called to see if Taylor had picked the kids up yet. When Mumsy answered the phone, I said, "Hey, have you talked to Taylor?" And she said, "No. Matt, I went by there and she wasn't home." And I said right then and there, I said, "Phyllis," that's a real name, Phyllis, kids call her Mumsy. I said, "Something's not right because Taylor would never not be there for the kids. No matter what she did, no matter if she went out drinking the night before, whatever, she always was here. If she knew the kids were going to be being dropped off or if she had to pick the kids up, she was always there to get them or she was always here to receive them." I knew right then something was wrong. Within a matter of an hour, we had got her best friend involved, her stepmom and her dad. We were all of Humble and Kingwood was buzzing with this Taylor. Nobody knows where Taylor's at. Somebody was saying they thought she had been seen at a local bar that night, Shamrock. I was talking to a friend of mine. And he said, "I'll find out right now if she's there," because it was conflicting back and forth. She was there. No, she wasn't. Said they saw her. But then so-and-so that works there says that she wasn't there. So he said, "Hey, Tiffany, give me a few minutes. I'm going to call so-and-so. He's the owner. He's my friend. I'm going to get him to roll the cameras back and see if Taylor was there." And of course, they know Taylor at this place because she's got a good friend that works there. So they rolled the camera back and he called me back and said Taylor did not go to Shamrock. So now everything's really starting to press, starting to really escalate with all of us. So her dad goes down to the police station. It's headed down to the police station to file a missing persons report. They then jumped on Facebook and posted a bunch of pictures of Taylor saying, do you know the whereabouts of this person? She was last seen getting a tattoo, named it a tattoo parlor. And so once we realized that, no, she had not gone to the bar, so her stepbrother and one of his friends jump in the car and they start driving around to local bars to see if maybe, possibly, she had went into a bar and got a little intoxicated and went and got in the car and realized she couldn't drive and fell asleep. We were just, anything that could have happened. When they drove around to the local bars that she might have gone to here in town and she wasn't there, we had all started saying, okay, well, we know the last place we talked to her was at this place, this tattoo parlor. So they started heading there. The boys headed there. At the same time, her best friend said her and her husband were going to head there. By this time, I was in Kennard with my mother. As I mentioned earlier, my father had passed away in May. So I'd been staying up in Kennard, Texas with my mother. And so I had done jumping in the truck and was headed this way. And the boys got to the tattoo parlor and they pulled in. And when they pulled in, one of the tattoo artists pulled in right behind them and said, are you here for Taylor? And his stepbrother said, yes, I am. And the guy unlocked the door and he ran in there looking for Taylor. And he found my baby in the back room, dead on a couch.
How was she positioned? Was she sitting up or was she lying down?
They said she was laying down on her side, facing the back of the couch, and her knee was up. And they said it looked like she was laying there cold. He then called his mother. And his mother called me and told me it wasn't good. I asked her, what do you mean it's not good? And she said, it's not good, Tiffany. And I screamed and I said, what do you mean it's not good? And she said, she didn't make it. And I thank the Lord right now that there was a traffic jam that I had just started coming up to and everybody was stopped. And I was just rolling up to a stop when I got that phone call because I had my breakdown sitting in traffic alone for a good 10 or 15 minutes. And if I had been driving, I probably would be dead myself. When my daughter's best friend called me, somebody had called her and told her. They were en route also to that tattoo shop. She called me crying. We cried together. We went to the tattoo shop. And after the brother got there, the next person that showed up was Taylor's boyfriend. He walked in and is the second person to see her laying there. Then the best friend showed up. The cops showed up. I was en route there. The stepmom was en route there. We all went there. This was 2 o'clock in the afternoon when she was found. When I got there, there was sheriff's departments there. There was no crime scene tape. There was no forensics coming through doing their thing. They were just waiting on the coroner. So the story was that the kid that supposedly at the time they were saying did her tattoo said that at 11 o'clock she had passed out on the back couch and he couldn't wake her up. So he decided to let her sleep it off and he was just going to come back in the morning and wake her up. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It wasn't in the morning. The owner of the place shows up and tells the cops that he was there until 11:30. And then proceeded to tell the police that all these people outside of his business was making it look bad. Another gentleman showed up on a motorcycle revving his engine. There was nothing going on. But when he got off his motorcycle, my ex-husband looked at him and said, and who are you? He says, oh, I'm so-and-so. I work here too. And he goes, oh yeah, what time did you leave last night? He said at midnight. And then the owner said that he left at 11:30. So that's three different times that they all said they left. The kid that closed up, that locked her in there and left her there, said he closed up at 11.
So you're telling me that there were at least three guys there with three different times when they left and three different versions of what had happened?
It was actually more than that.
And then you and Taylor's boyfriend start getting really strange messages that neither of you believe came from Taylor.
We originally thought somebody else was texting her or somebody else was on her phone. Some things have been wiped off her phone. We just realized this in the last 2 hours. And the correspondence between her and the owner of the shop that was supposed to be buying, going to be buying her tab, the guy that is the one who actually did her tattoo, but told them the other guy did her tattoo. And the other guy said, no, he did her tattoo, but I know who did her tattoo. And it was the owner. All the correspondence between him and her on her phone, there was nothing. We could find nothing where she was saying she was going there, or him texting her and saying, bring your stuff by. We couldn't find anything on any of her platforms or anything. Her best friend sat down and went through her entire phone. Well, Taylor had another phone that she had lost one night. And so she went and bought another one. So she still had the other one. And so she carried the two phones with her, but the other one only worked like when she was hooked up to Wi-Fi. And she just kept random things on it. She kept everything was still, all her platforms were still on there. And that was really puzzling to us to find that none of that was on there. My youngest was looking at her other phone and found where on Snapchat was all this correspondence between her and the guy that did her tattoo that owned the shop. But on her phone that she used that worked, there was none of that correspondence on her Snapchat. It was all on Snapchat, or not Snapchat, it's Instagram. And also there was a gentleman that commented on the Grizz Hood News. She's the one that actually broke the story and it started this. It's all over Facebook. If you type in, you saw it?
Yes.
She's the one that kicked it all off. And there was a guy that commented on it and he had said, unfortunately, I was there when it happened. When he ended up reaching out to me and telling me that he was there getting a tattoo and that my daughter sat next to him and talked to him the whole time he was getting his tattoo. He left at 12. And the owner and the other guy told the cops that my daughter was highly intoxicated when she got to them, which was absolutely not true. She had been at a sushi place with a couple of her good friends that are bartenders and several other people. And the two bartenders both confirmed to me that she was in no way intoxicated when she left them 30 minutes earlier. And it took about 30 minutes to drive over to that shop. So the gentleman that reached out to me said that when he got there, Taylor was perfectly fine, but he watched her go from 0 to 100 very quickly. And he said he never saw her take anything, which my daughter did not do drugs. He said she was drinking, but he didn't know what she was drinking, but he slept at 12. I asked him, why would you leave her there? They say she was passed out. He said, oh, no, wait. When I left, Taylor was fine. She was up bebopping around. And one of my friends popped off and said, which one was it? She was went from 0 to 100. So she was really screwed up, or she was dancing around, popping, bebopping and having a good time. Which one was it? And the guy was like, your daughter was fine when I left. She was not passed out. Had she been passed out, I would have tried to wake her or tried to get on her phone and call somebody. I would never have just left her passed out. He said, I can't believe that they left her passed out. The cops told me, because I was very upset and I was saying, why is that guy right there not in the going to jail? This was supposedly the kid that locked her in there overnight. I said, why is he going to get in his car for? And the cop pulled me to the side and said, ma'am, listen, your daughter was highly intoxicated when she got here last night. And I said, no, she wasn't. I talked to my daughter. I know she wasn't. He's like, he said, it's been confirmed by a couple of people, that the owner and the guy, that she was highly intoxicated when she got here and that she passed out on the couch and they tried to wake her and they couldn't wake her. So they decided to go ahead and let her sleep it off and basically keep her from hurting herself or anybody else on the road. And they were just going to come wake her up in the morning. And that's what the cop had to tell me.
And this obviously wasn't true since nobody checked on her in the morning.
No one went there till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was only after they saw on Facebook, nobody could find her. And it was being treated like a missing person. That's when he got up and carried his butt up there. I think my daughter was drugged. And I think that it was too much for her. And I think she died and they left her there so they could act like she passed out on the couch.
And there's definitely going to be an autopsy on your daughter. Is that correct?
They did the autopsy already. My daughter was, the following day, the coroner had her ready to be released to the funeral home. And I called and spoke with the coroner who was on scene that I spoke with. They let me go in and see my daughter before they put her in the van. And she was a very sweet lady. She just so happened to be the one to answer the phone when I called. And she told me that Taylor was ready to be released to go to the funeral home. And I said, I want to find out, did they do a rape kit on her? Did they do that? And she's, I don't believe that they did. And I said, well, I need to talk to somebody because I really would like a rape kit done on her. And I also want a hair follicle done. And so the actual medical examiner called me back and he was like, do you suspect foul play? And I said, I absolutely suspect foul play. And he said, well, I went ahead and did a rape kit on your daughter and we will do the hair follicle. He said, but listen, when I do my work, he said, I also do a little bit of investigation to go along with my findings. And he said, I noticed that they're talking about this young lady that died at the owner's house in a similar manner the year before. He said, and I went back and looked that case up and that was a long time ago and it didn't happen at his house. And I said, no, sir, you're looking at the wrong thing. I said, I've spoke with the young lady's sister. It happened last year in 2020 and she was found dead in his house. Same thing. Her boyfriend, they were all hanging out, whatever. Boyfriend left to go somewhere. He had to go run to the shop and do a tattoo. When he got back to the owner's house, the owner said, hey, go check on your old lady. And when he went in there, he found her dead. So the coroner or the medical examiner told me, could you find out the case number on that for me? So I called the young lady and she gave me the case number and I called the coroner back and gave the case number. He was not there at that time. He had specifically had the young lady to answer the phone to tell me that he had to go do something or another, but that yes, he had done a follicle and that he put a hold on her case. And then I finally got some sleep and I think he tried to call me when I was asleep. Well, he did. Somebody did, I guess, because they were letting me know that they were now going to release her body to the funeral home. And so she is now at the funeral home, but yes, they did do toxicology. We don't, it's pending at this moment. We don't know what the findings were, but he did ask me why I wanted to do a hair follicle. He said, can I ask you why? And I said, when this hit social media, people were talking about an overdose and stuff. And I said, listen, my daughter didn't do drugs. And I know she didn't. I said, my daughter and I were very close. She told me everything. She did not do drugs. And that's why I want the hair follicle. I said, because I know it's going to happen because this has happened before with this guy. And I'm not letting this get swept under the rug. I can't let that happen. I said, and when it comes back, they're going to try to say that she overdosed. Well, when they do, I'm going to be right there with that hair follicle saying, really? Because she didn't do drugs.
I would say that it was definitely a good recommendation for you to make about the follicle test because, as you must know, hair follicles can be tested for drug use. Now I would like to go back to the previous girl who died in the tattoo owner's home. You told me that you spoke to the dead girl's sister, and the way she died was near identical to how Taylor died. Can you tell me how old the other girl was when she died? Was she an older girl, or was she young like Taylor?
23 or 24. I could be wrong. She was very young. Her name was Priscilla Rodriguez.
What was the final outcome on her death?
They said she overdosed. But the boyfriend said she was fine when he left. And her sister told me that her sister did not do drugs. These guys are bad guys. They both got records. As a matter of fact, the owner spent 7 years in prison. He's got this girl attached to him. And this is strange. Supposedly, the young lady that died, her brother or cousin was best friends with the owner of this shop. He is also dead. Same thing. In his presence, died of an overdose. Those two were confirmed. My daughter's best friend has talked more with the young lady that was giving us the information about her sister and her cousin. I didn't get his name. She didn't disclose that to us at first, but then after everything got rolling, she reached out again to my daughter's best friend and gave her that information as well.
So in your opinion, or at least what you know about this case, what do you think authorities are going to rule on this case? Is it a homicide? Was it a drug overdose? Was it alcohol poisoning? Any type of idea? I mean, I realize you don't have the autopsy results, or I'm not sure if those will even be shared with you. But if her case is being treated as a possible homicide or mysterious circumstances, I'm sure you will at least get to know that.
I don't know at this point. I was able to get through to somebody at the police station to find out who is investigating it. And it is an open investigation. I do know that. And I finally got the detective's name, and I called and left him a message and told him I wanted to have a face-to-face with him because I had a lot of things I wanted to share with him. When they took my daughter away, they gave me her belongings that were inside of there. They gave me her phone and her little box of salves that she had taken with, her shorts that she had wore to get the tattoo in, her keys. And another strange thing was her purse was in her car, sitting in the passenger seat. Taylor Marie would have never left her purse sitting in the car anywhere, especially in a neighborhood that wasn't good. She wouldn't have done it in a good neighborhood. And another thing, once I got my daughter's purse, she was a neat freak. She was OCD so bad. She could not have things like in her car. You know how you might have something rolling around in the back seat or something? No, Taylor couldn't have stuff like that. Everything, her apartment is immaculate. Her kids' room was always immaculate. Everything has a place with Taylor. When I looked in her purse, everything was gone through and dumped out. And when I opened it up, I was like, someone went in Taylor's purse. Okay. And how did they go in her purse? What? I don't get it. Her purse is locked in the car. Like she left it there. But then again, somebody went in her purse. There's just a lot of inconsistencies. There's a lot of lies that are being told. A lot of things that don't add up. And I'm not going to let it rest. I'm going to get justice for my daughter and for Priscilla. I told her sister, I said, I'm going to get justice for both of them, baby. I promise you that. And I am going to get justice for them. Whether it truly was an accident and my daughter drank too much, I'm positive that's not the case. Whatever the reason, even if it was an accident, they failed to render aid to my daughter. They just left her there, locked her up and left her there. So either way, they're going to pay.
I would suggest that you hire an attorney immediately and possibly a private investigator if you can.
That's already been taken care of.
Immediately.
We're already filing a wrongful death suit. There's already a private investigator on it. Everything was so suspicious to us right off the bat. And the way the police was handling it, it wasn't a crime scene or anything. We knew immediately with the things that we were seeing and finding out that we had to get the ball rolling. We had to do it. We had to find things out. We were going to have to be the ones to push this.
And you do have to get involved. I always like to suggest that to people because you just can't rely on the police for everything. I think that in your case, it would be good to put out flyers, contact the local media, contact programs like Nancy Grace, and just do everything you can to get publicity for this case. I mean, you saw what publicity just recently did for the case of the young lady that disappeared and was found murdered recently. I'd also like to ask what law enforcement agency is handling your daughter's case?
Harris County Sheriff's Department. The coroner had told me that whenever he concluded his findings, that it was him that would be sending it to whatever department it would, whether it be homicide. He gave me four or five categories, but there's too much going on, too many lies, too many things that aren't right.
This entire case seems really off, and I'm not somebody that's a believer of coincidences, especially when dead bodies turn up, but including Taylor, there are now at least two women who have been found dead around this tattoo shop's owner. For anybody with any common sense, that is definitely something that is questionable.
You would not believe the people that have reached out to me. I started just going ahead and accepting friend request because I thought it was my daughter's friends, but it's not just my daughter's friends. It's people reaching out about these guys. We're having t-shirts being made tonight for Justice for Taylor. We're having a candlelight vigil for her at Harley Davidson in Kingwood on Tuesday at 7:30. But this is another thing that made me smile for the first time since the situation happened. I got a phone call from a KHOU, one of the investigators. called me, right, and he's going to do Taylor's story. And that made me so happy. I'm thankful that you took the time out to talk with me about my daughter and this case, because I want to get it out there in any way I want people to know, because I couldn't save my daughter, couldn't save the other young lady, but maybe we can save somebody else. Oh, and this is another thing. I forgot about this too. We just found this out, that the other young man, the one that supposedly locked her in there, now he says that the owner told him to lock her in there. But anyway, this is what we just found out about the other young man. The other young man, I don't know when this was, how long ago it was, but his girlfriend died in the exact same manner with him. It is very strange. I'm not sitting here just telling you hearsay. We've backed out all of the things we found out, the fact.
I feel hopeful that your daughter will get justice. So for anyone that's out there listening to this episode, if they know anything about what happened to Taylor that night with Taylor, what would you say to that person or persons?
Reach out to me on Facebook and give me that information, because any information I can get, it just any ammunition, anything I can get, I would greatly appreciate any information on these guys or in their past, anything anybody knows about them that will help this case. I would greatly appreciate it. And my name is Tiffany Hicks on Facebook. You can look me up.
And that concludes the story of Taylor Marie Clark. What happened to this young woman? Why was she found deceased inside a locked tattoo shop? How come no one bothered to check the tattoo shop early Saturday morning to make sure that she was alive? Why didn't anyone take her to the hospital or call 911? The tattoo shop owner and his artist claimed that she had passed out before midnight, but a customer who left at midnight discounts what the shop owner claims. This is definitely a strange case. As of this recording, Tiffany doesn't know the results of her daughter's toxicology reports or the rape kit. In the meantime, if you know anything about Taylor's death or saw something unusual that evening, I'm asking you to please contact the Harris County Sheriff's Department at 713-967-5700, or you can call Crime Stoppers at 713-222-TIPS. Also, a family friend is putting together a Facebook page called Justice for Taylor. Once it's up, you can visit the page for additional information about Taylor. I will also provide all this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.